Hello and thank you for joining Newsroom Insider. I'm Jim Poling, Managing Editor of the Hamilton Spectator, and I'm your guest host today. My guests today are two journalists with the Hamilton Spectator, Susan Claremont, a longtime columnist whose beat includes courts, crime, and social justice, and David Crosby, a website editor at the Spectator, who has expertise in creating, editing, and producing podcasts. Susan and David have created a five-part serialized audio narrative called Covering Diane. Before Susan and David discuss the making of Covering Diane, listen to a small segment of their podcast. The audio I'm about to play is part of the 37-year murder mystery, and it captures a segment of audio tape. It's when a caller, a mysterious caller, makes a 911 call to police.
Emergency Bureau.
This police?
Yes.
I got information on how that girl was killed in Barton and Lake.
What's your name?
It's not important.
Okay, what's the information?
She was raped before she was killed. She was wearing blue jeans, a white top, and a red or orange top over top of the white top. Blonde hair, about 5'11". She was found face down in the creek with a tire on top of her shoulders and head.
Yeah.
And that's about all I can tell you.
They're here to talk about it today, and it's running on thespec.com. Let's start with David. David, how would you sum up this story?
That's kind of a huge task. I mean, it is really a 37-year story, starting with this almost cinematic beginning. Again, we've talked about this, and you talked about this in the podcast, Jim. It's so easy to visualize these discrepant parts of it. It starts with a young woman kind of reluctantly being goaded into going out for birthday drinks with a friend and, you know, some other people she doesn't know that well, decides she's not having a great time, wants to go home, whatever. And the next we hear about her is sort of this, again, in in filmic terms, kind of the Stand By Me moment of these kids playing in the ravine, finding her body. In and of itself, this is a terrifying and fascinating story, but you also have the fact that this is going on within the realm of a serial predator, who would later be termed the ravine rapist. This going unsolved for 17 years until, you know, this Tim Hortons DNA sting happens, this kind of almost pillar of his community figure being exposed as the at that time alleged killer, going through four trials.
Right.
Just the scope of it is.
So you have a 37-year-old murder story, four trials, and a lot of the space in between. Susan, this is a story you know very well. You've been telling it for a number of years. What's different here for you?
You're right. I've been telling the story of Diane Rowenowitz and Robert Boudreau for the entire time I've been at The Spectator, which is 20 years now. So I've told it many times. I've told it in a number of different ways. And yet, we have still found a new way to tell this story. By podcast. This is a new venture for me. I've listened to podcasts, but I've never made one before. Dave's taught me a lot about that. And it's a new way to reach different readers, a different audience for The Spectator. I've heard since we launched episode number one a couple of days ago, I've spoken to many longtime Spectator readers who have called me to ask, and they're so sheepish about it, and they shouldn't be, but they ask, what is a podcast and how do I do this? So, you know, I think it's pretty cool that people who have subscribed to the Spec, in some cases for almost 50 years, are now trying their very first ever podcast because of the Diane Rowenowitz story. But it's also new in the content of this. You know, I've written endlessly about the evidence in this case, about the trials, and this time it's about the journalism behind the story. The Spectator has owned this story for almost 40 years, and I inherited it from reporters before me. And I think in this day and age, Jim, when people are becoming more and more media savvy, when they are demanding transparency from the media, when they want to know, in this era of fake news, people want to know how news is made, like what's behind it, how do we do our jobs? And this sort of pulls back the veil on that and shows people how we have done our work around this story for all those years.
So you've written literally tens of thousands of words on this case, including a book, an e-book. To produce this project, David, you have some very technical skills, I'd have to imagine, that produce an audio podcast. And Susan, you have traditional journalism skills. How was that whole experience?
It was a learning curve, definitely. But I think we definitely, for the two of us, have developed a pretty good model going forward in terms of how we conducted it and what we learned at each step.
But are you writing for a newspaper? Are you writing for a radio? It's a new medium with each has its own traditional attributes.
Well, I wrote a script. I haven't written a script since I was in journalism school doing my radio training. So that was different for me, you know, thinking in a whole different way than I do when I'm writing for the paper.
Do you think about the story differently doing that?
I'm thinking about how it sounds. I'm thinking about the questions that I'm asking, because I'm the one who did the interviews with everybody who is in the podcast. I'm wanting them to explain things in their own words rather than me coming in afterwards and writing to fill in those spaces. I need to ask the right questions so that I'm hearing the story told in their voices. And I have to say, one of the greatest delights of doing this podcast was that because of how we approached it, I was interviewing a lot of journalists. It's pretty sweet interviewing a journalist because they know how to tell a story, unlike most other people. I mean, they know, you get someone like Barbara Brown, the former stellar Hamilton Spectator court reporter, who just knows how to fill in the background and the context and, and is thinking about the legalities of what she's saying and puts it all together so beautifully. I hardly had to do a thing.
So this is five parts. Each part takes a week, or a new segment is released each week. What are the components? What's in week one? What do people hear in week two?
We start with the crime in week one, and then we move on to the trials themselves. Part three is,
I think, the legal aspects of the case. I may be getting this backwards. Another part is taking a closer look at who is Diane and who is Robert Badgerow. And then we wrap up with part five is, why is this case so important to Hamilton? Why does it resonate? And why do people still care after all these years?
I'm amazed with it. You mentioned both Diane's name and Robert Badgerow. Robert Badgerow was convicted of killing Diane, and Diane Renderowitz, of course, was the victim. I found in telling the story, you've done a very personal job of bringing those people to light for people so that they get a sense of who they were and where they lived and how they fit into the community.
Well, we thought that was really important. I mean, for all these years that I've been covering this case, it has been personally important to me to make sure that Diane is not forgotten. And so I think if you were to read any column I've ever written about this case, you would see that Diane is at the center of it, at the heart of it. As for Robert Badgerow, when I speak to readers, you know, if I'm out in public giving a talk about my job, and first of all, this is one of the cases that I'm always asked about. And the question I'm always asked is, what is Robert Badgerow like? People just want to know what it's like to have a conversation with him and what his demeanor is like. And I have spent many an hour with Robert Badgerow, sitting with him in a courtroom, but also have a very odd, friendly relationship with him that I think would surprise a lot of people.
So this is it's a very Hamilton story. It's a local story. It's about two Hamilton people. Who's the story for? Do I necessarily have to be a Hamilton resident to enjoy it?
No, I mean, I would certainly, I think it's kind of a something that translates pretty universally and is more than interesting enough for anyone outside of Hamilton. But yeah, there is something very specifically Hamilton about it, just in terms of the places that it touches.
Also, so many people have connections to the people in this story. If you're a longtime Hamilton resident, chances are pretty good you know somebody who has a connection to the Badgerow case. But Dave's absolutely right. I mean, you know, this story is about it's about forensics. It's about amazing DNA evidence. It's about legal precedence. It's about it's a mystery for 17 years. And I think, you know, that is intriguing to somebody halfway around the world as it is to someone who lives you know, in Stony Creek. So I think people will get different things out of this story, but that's one of the nice things about a podcast, is its readership is limitless.
And universal. Before we wrap up here, David, how do people find Covering Diane?
Well, the easiest way is to go to thespec.com. It'll be featured along the top navigation there, and there'll be a photo on the homepage of it as well. Otherwise, just any place you get your podcast normally, through iTunes or whatever app.
And you've created a lot of background work, photos and other audio that viewers can access?
So we've got a lot of archival photos, obviously, from covering the story for the last four decades. And Susan has also dug into her capacious file folders that you hear at the beginning and taken some photos and uploaded some of those documents that we'll be adding each week.
Great. Well, Susan and David, thank you very much for joining us here on Newsroom Insider today. And listeners, thank you very much for joining. This is another edition of Newsroom Insider.